This podcast replay is brought to you by Sloman's Home Security. The first 40 Big O listeners right now, dial 1-800-ALARM-ME. We'll get this limited time offer, a free doorbell camera that connects directly to your smartphone with installation of your Sloman's Shield. Call 1-800-ALARM-ME. Keep your family safe. Call 1-800-ALARM-ME.
Welcome, welcome, welcome. An hour of hardcore Miami Heat talk. Clay Ferreira here, Ira Winderman there. And Ira, I want to start this with something that we barely even mentioned in the crosstalk. Because the Heat are on the verge of moving on to the Eastern Conference Finals. And it almost kind of plays into where I wanted to go with this, the fact that we didn't even mention it. Jimmy Butler. And, you know, we talked about what he said post-game and stuff like that, but we didn't talk about his performances over the last few games. And I think we're kind of getting to this point, Ira, where we're taking for granted what he does on a game-in, game-out basis, and especially in the postseason. And what we've seen over the last few games, the fact that he just senses when something is needed, and he finds a way to get it done. He is a superstar in this league. I'm done with the whole, oh, is he a top 12, top 10, top 15, whatever. What I'm starting to see from Jimmy Butler, and it's something that we saw in the bubble, and it's something that I wish I had remembered and not been a prisoner of the moment over and over again. He knows when it's time. And I thought it was really interesting, Ira, if you read, Cooper Moorhead did a great breakdown from Heat.com about what this series has been about to this point. And the Philadelphia 76ers have basically said in this series, we're okay with Jimmy Butler scoring. We're okay with him going to the basket. We're okay if he gets inside. We are more comfortable with him shooting closer to the rim than we are with him passing out and finding an open three-point shooter. So they've been taking away his passes. What I thought was interesting in the last few games, Ira, what has Jimmy Butler told us over and over again ever since he got here? I don't care about scoring. I don't care how many points I put up. And I think almost to a fault, we feel like he is sometimes selfishly unselfish. But what did we see in games 3 and 4? He goes out there, he scores 33. Goes out there, he scores 38. He scores 40 in game 4. They lose. And even though they were close in the fourth quarter at times, it didn't feel like they had control of that game. Ira, last night, he goes out, he scores early, realizes that Philly has to make an adjustment. Then boom, all of a sudden Max Strus starts hitting. Guys start hitting shots. I just feel like I want to give him a little bit of credit here at the top because I think we're starting to take him for granted a little bit. And I'm not saying you, but I just think like as a fans, media, I don't think we realize just how good this guy is. And I want to give him credit for what we've seen over the last few games.
You know, it was interesting. I was writing an answer to an Ask Ira question, and I kind of stopped. I got to be honest here. I'm going to sort of take people inside how soup is made and how what we do. A lot of times when I predict these series, you know, you do the matchups, you go Heat in 6 or whatever, it's almost hard to pick against the Heat because I just don't need the goddamn blowback. So there are times I honestly thought, so and true. It might be in the conference finals also where the Heat would lose. I just don't want to deal with the bullcrap. So that's that. The point I'm trying to make is this. I had an Ask Ira question, and my answer was this. I do not believe you can win an NBA championship without a top 10 player. Then I sat down and I said to myself, is Jimmy Butler a top 10 player? And honestly, Clay, when I went through the list, I had a very hard time getting him there. In other words, I want you to be honest here for a second. No one's listening. It's just you and me. Who's the better player, Jimmy Butler or Jason Tatum? Honestly. Clay Ferraro, honestly.
So, okay, no, I would have said Jason Tatum.
Here's the point.
And I think he's the better scorer. He's the better offensive player.
Exactly. And here's the point I'm trying to make. So I can easily give you 10 players who are better than Jimmy Butler, and I know Heat Nation and diehard Heat fan are going to go, no, he's our guy and all that. But what I'm saying is this. But when Jimmy Butler is playing as a top 10 player, it changes everything. So the deal with Jimmy Butler is if you're rating players 1 through 10, you're not having Jimmy in your list. You're just not. You're just not. And if you're going 1 through 15, you might not either. That's why Jimmy might not make an All-NBA team this year. But there are moments in the bubble, leaning over on the side there out of his last breath, 40 points in Philadelphia, facilitating and doing what he did last night, where Jimmy is a top 10 player and arguably is a top 5 player. Because when he's playing like an MF-er and it's all about the moment, Jimmy Butler in the moment, matter of fact, I think Jimmy Butler at his son of a bitch best, is a better player than Jason Tatum. Because Jimmy Butler will take it. He will seize it. He won't have one of those Jason Tatum games like Jason did the other day where he was a non-factor and a complimentary player. So what I'm saying is this. The whole Jimmy Butler experience comes down to this. When he's playing as a top 10 player, this Heat team is as good as anyone, at least in the Eastern Conference. It's been a little up and down. We know he doesn't care as much about the regular season. Like Big O said in our crosstalk, he doesn't care as much about scoring. But when you see the complete Jimmy Butler, which is sort of like the Cadbury Easter egg, it shows up every now and then, but it's not here 12 months a year, you can see how special the Heat are. Right now, Jimmy Butler's playing like a top 10 player. Right now, Jimmy Butler's probably playing closer to a top 5 player.
Drop your questions, your comments in the chat. Feel free to weigh in on this topic because, it's rare that Ira and I genuinely disagree, but I think we do here. And for this reason, I'll admit here, I am somebody who I value performances in the playoffs, mm-hmm. in big moments, far, far more than I do in the regular. And this is a crazy take that I've had forever, and I'm never going to let it go. I think Robert Horry should be in the Hall of Fame. I just think that there are certain players who – because of what they do in the big moments, they deserve a bit more credit. And I think with Jimmy Butler, is it frustrating that he clearly gets bored during the regular season at times? It doesn't feel like he has to put his foot all the way down. Yeah, it is. And especially if you're covering the team like Iron, you get to ask questions and people are peppering your timeline with, where's Jimmy Butler? What's he doing?
Right.
Or you have to write a column where you're answering questions and – I get it. And when we're hosting an hour-long show and they're losing a game to the Knicks and whatever, when it matters. And I think the thing that when you ask me if he's a top five, top 10 player, and you compare him to Jason Tatum, do I think Jason Tatum's peak is going to be better than Jimmy Butler's peak? Absolutely. Do I think that during the regular season, do I think that most of the time Jason Tatum puts on better performances? Yes, I do. But I feel like the sixth sense that Jimmy Butler has for the game is so rare. And I don't know, if you look around the NBA right now, who are the guys that are close to Jimmy when it comes to that? I think you put LeBron James, obviously. I think it's the one thing where – I've always said this about Jimmy. I think if LeBron was a B-plus to an A-minus at everything on the floor – Jimmy Butler is similar. Jimmy Butler is maybe a B minus
across
the board. And it's rare to find a player who does that and then also elevates his game in the postseason. And that's where I put – so when you ask me if I'm comparing Jason Tatum to Jimmy Butler, I think it's a great comparison because I don't feel like at this point in his career Jason Tatum is anywhere near Jimmy Butler when it comes to that sixth sense. And I think specifically in the playoffs when you're trying to win big games and you're trying to move on – I think that sixth sense is so valuable and it takes you to a different level.
And matter of fact, I'm going to have this thing careening off the rails so you can bring it back on as your professional studio host that you are. It's not just Jimmy Butler in this case. To me, it's the entire Heat. When you get the best of each individual player, this team's at another level.
Yeah.
In other words, Bam Adebayo, same thing. How many times have you got, and I come on Wednesday on our Sloman's Home Security Inside the Paint show and spoken about where's Bam? Where's his offense? I didn't notice him last night. How does he only get 2 rebounds? How does he only get 3 rebounds? And then there are other times you see the best of. Same with Kyle Lowry this season. Same with Tyler Hero. So it's really interesting. I think the Heat's stars have this very wide spectrum of what they are on a game-to-game basis. We have seen really not so good Tyler Hero a bunch of times.
Yes.
But we've seen freaking fantastic Tyler Hero a bunch of times. The key to this team, as the competition level gets tougher, Milwaukee or Boston next, if the Heat get out of this round, then probably Golden State or Phoenix after that, you're going to have more of the nights where it's not just one and it's not just two, almost sound like LeBron here, but it's going to have to be 3 or 4. That's the thing about this Heat team. They have players, when you get the best of these players, then these players are at a completely different level and can raise you to the next level. So that's what I think we're talking about Jimmy Butler here also is, can you get the absolute best out of Jimmy in more of these important games? And Clay, you were spot on. Thursday in Philadelphia seems to be one of those moments.
Yeah, and I think it's important that they're targeting that already. And, there was – And you saw Jimmy and PJ Tucker kind of joking around on the TNT post game. But then when they hit the podium, I mean, it was to a person. It was like, yeah. No, we got to go to Philly and we got to get this one. I think it's because they know they need to prove this to themselves, that correct. They got to go there and they got to win. And Jimmy Butler said this too. He said, hey, I played in Philly. I know what that place is like. And I know, and Eric Spoelstra said, we have to embrace that environment. He was smiling and he was laughing. He was like, man, I mean, you have to go into that environment and make it your own. You have correct. To let that environment trigger you in a positive direction. And so anyway, I will leave this topic to bed here. There have been times when I've certainly been critical of Jimmy Butler and the, you know, I posted the Philip Seymour Hoffman when he couldn't make a single three pointer the other night, early in game three. And everybody kind of like got on me. Oh, he's the only one scoring. Jimmy's not perfect. Nowhere close to it. But when he's at his best and when he is utilizing that sixth sense and everybody else can follow, to your point, it takes this team to a different level. So spin this thing forward now. Heat in six. Will the Heat find a way to win this thing in game six? I know you already, you know, spoiler alert, you already said you can't confidently say one way or the other based on what a home court series this has been. So I'll ask you in this way. After last night's performance, does your confidence level that they can go and steal one in Philadelphia and end this thing early, is your confidence level any higher after last night that they can go in there and win than it was after they lost the first two?
It's not for this reason. I was in Philadelphia for games three and four. I saw what the difference the crowd made, how Philadelphia simply played better and their role players played better. So I need something to change that. I need something to sway me a little bit more. Maybe if there's more Joel Embiid talking about MVP instead of the game, if there's James Harden looking more like a lost soul in these intervening 48 hours, I might move a little bit more to that. Clay, I do agree with the point you made earlier, though, is if the Heat are who they think they are, then it doesn't look good to have that seventh game, to have that defeated, you know, versus Philadelphia 4-3, because this is not the toughest challenge on the road to where they want to go. This was never about beating the Atlanta Hawks. This was never about only making the Eastern Conference Finals. This is about something bigger. So you damn well better be able to beat a Philadelphia team with a limited Joel Embiid, with a confused or flustered James Harden in fewer than seven, because Boston is much better than the Sixers team. I think you'd agree. Milwaukee, especially if they get Chris Middleton back, is much better than the Sixers team. So if you're at desperation point, I mean, Clay, look, you know what it's like. You've been in these buildings. I don't know what time the game is going to be on Sunday if there's a game seven. Let's say it's an early game. Those are always even more nerve-wracking, okay? 3:30 game seven against the Sixers Sunday, FTX Arena. You might show up, you know, stand-ups, things like that, preparation at noon or one. You know what the tension is like in the air before game seven. It is a really, really tough emotional place to be. Everyone is on edge. The ushers get there early. Security is there early. People are milling about the court early. Game seven is nerve-wracking because you know what, Clay? It only takes one turned angle for Jimmy Butler. It only takes one, Max Strus can't hit a three, right? It only takes, whoa, James Harden just hit three three-pointers in the first quarter, and boom, all of a sudden you're in desperation time. These players know that. Jimmy Butler's played in game sevens. These guys know, PJ Tucker knows what a game seven is like, know what the heartbreak can be like also. So, yeah, if the Heat are who they think they are, I'm not sure who they are. You're going to answer this next. I think they take care of it in six, but Clay, do you have any sense in the totality, not just last night's play Peppers with 8 minutes to go and move on to the next thing? Do you think the Heat have shown a stamp of greatness yet where you can confidently say, screw the fans in Philly, screw them having fighting in the stands and all that, we're going to take care of business? Have the Heat yet to really put down their foot in a moment of adversity? Not last night where it's at home and it's all going good, but if we yet to see that from the Heat where, holy crap, nothing's going right and they still find a way.
Well, I think winning game five without Jimmy and without Kyle Lowry, I think you have to give them credit for that one. But to your point, that's at home. Right.
And so they had a margin of error. And if they lose that, they win game six against Atlanta or game seven against Atlanta. Right.
Fair. Yeah. And the pressure wasn't. I get that. I think let me say this, and I want to, by the way, the first thing you want to read, you always want to read Ira Winderman's Sun Sentinel, but this is gonna, the second time I'm going to bring up Cooper Moorhead's piece that I found just fascinating that he wrote the other day, and this is why I'm confident heading into Game 6. The Heat were the best team in the NBA all season long at forcing the other team defensively, forcing them to take the ball down to the last 3 or 4 seconds of the shot clock. They were also the best team in the NBA that when other teams take those shots late in the shot clock, points per possession way down, right? Like the Heat were the best team in the NBA in half-court defense, forcing the first few games of this series, and even in Game 4, Philly played on the Heat's terms. They were taking those shots at the end of the shot clock. Also in Game 4, the Miami Heat were the best team in the NBA all season long, three-point shooting. In Game 4, analytically, they were getting those wide-open three-point looks. They just weren't fought. So if you look at this series, and this is why I'm confident heading into Game 6, Game 3 was the game where the Heat didn't show up. And I think they would tell you that privately. They just weren't there. The Philly was playing off the fuel from the home crowd. You give them a ton of credit. Game 4 was a game that was played on the Heat's terms relative to each possession. Ira, if you were to take each possession, and we know Eric Spoelstra's a film guy, if you were to take every possession of Game 4, offensively and defensively, show it to Eric Spoelstra and freeze it at the moment the ball was released, not showing whether Eric Spoelstra would have taken it. So, look, I'm not trying to be like every cliche that we hear from Eric Spoelstra, make or miss league. It was a make or miss league in Game 4 in particular, and I feel like if you have those same looks for both teams in Game 6, I think the Heat win this thing, and this thing is over. And I also think, Ira, if you go back to Game 4 and then you spin it forward to what we saw in Game 5, Game 4 looks much different if James Harden isn't making these crazy three-pointers with guys in his face falling away. You're going to take those shots if you're the Heat defensive. You're okay with that. And give credit to James Harden for making them in Game 4. If he doesn't in Game 6, they're going to lose and we're going to have a Game 7. But there are certain times where you just have to live with the result. And I not to go off track here, because I want to get your take on this, I thought it was really interesting, Ira, and I said this on our Sunday night show after Game 4. I said, if I'm Eric Spoelstra, I don't even hold practice tomorrow. I tell the guys to go bowling. I tell the guys to go to the beach. Like, get away from basketball, because there was nothing schematically that they could have changed between Games 4 and Games 5 that could have changed the result. They were in their own head in Game 4. They were missing wide open shots. But if you kept the same scheme and went into Game 5 and did what you did in Game 4, you're going to win. Just don't overthink it. And I think the same thing heading into Game 6. Like, the rules of engagement are there now. Just make the shots that are open. Hope that Philly doesn't make the contested shots that you've been forcing them to take in the first few games of this series.
And I think the other part of this all is Joel Embiid, and has he just reached a point? Remember when he took that shot where Dwayne Dedman hit the ball and went into Joel Embiid's face? He went down.
Yes.
I thought the series ended right there.
So I agree.
I just wonder if he's at his limits between the thumb injury, between the facial fracture, coming back from a concussion, everything he's been through, having the heavy lifting, not getting awarded the MVP for what he felt was carrying his team as much as anyone with the Ben Simmons situation. Again, that's the thing. You get to a point, we kid about Cancun and how when you lose your last game, everyone's off to Cancun. But I think sometimes during series, teams also get that feeling. Is it worth it? Do you think Philadelphia, in their heart of hearts, Clay Ferraro, even if they win Game 6, number one, give you two-part question here, because we like to make every one of our segments run late early in the show. So two-part segment. Part number one, do you think in their heart of hearts, Philadelphia has any belief that they can come back and win a Game 7 here?
Any? Yes. A lot? No.
Minuscule,
after what we
right?
saw last night. Yeah, yeah. There are levels to everything, but no. Yeah, yeah.
Do you think Philadelphia, in their basketball knowledge hearts, believes they have a chance in, holy hell, to beat either Boston or Milwaukee in the next round?
Same answer. I think it's one of those where anything can happen.
So my point is this. I think the Sixers are at the tipping point. And I think it just takes a subtle little shove. They're teetering. They're going back and forth. They're a weeble. They're wobbling for the older people out here. They're that little clown thing you punch and it comes back up. And eventually it doesn't come back up. I think that's where the Sixers are. It's like that guy outside the used car lot that they, you know, yes, they blow the air in, and then at the end of the day, all of a sudden the air goes off and the thing just, you know, really, you got to watch it. Folks, you got to watch this on YouTube to get the full visual. Like, that's where I think the Sixers
I want to make a GIF of Ira, or GIF, whatever, of Ira just like going up.
Being the used car guy out there with the hands waving. That's where I think the Sixers are. That's my whole point of this entire first segment here. If you missed it, come back, catch it on the podcast, is I think you can nudge the Sixers over the precipice with a solid start, because I think their fight almost is all gone right now, Clay.
All right, coming up, I want to talk about the Kyle Lowry situation. Yes. Are the Heat better off without him? That's next, right here on Inside the Paint. Welcome back. Next segment here, we're going to talk about Kyle Lowry in a second. Get to some of your comments right here, your questions. Big O says, is Jason Tatum waiting for year 10? Look, I got buddies who are Boston fans, and one of them's our morning anchor, Eric Yutzi. And he said the other day, he said, man, if Jason Tatum needs to step up in these situations. He definitely does. And look, game four, fourth quarter, there was a stretch where he certainly did. But I think Celtics fans are still waiting for that, right? And for him to kind of show what Jimmy Butler has shown, which is the ability to capture the moment. You know, we're talking about players that have that sixth sense and being able to take over games when it matters the most. And let me find who brought up CP3 here, which was a really good.
Yes, that's a great comment. Analogy.
Yeah. AKW Beat. Yeah, he says LeBron, Dame, and CP3. I'd say CP3, LeBron, and Jimmy Butler just kind of on their own plane right there. And then Greater Good makes a comment. Pat Riley's always talked about players that step up and in the dance. And, you know, I think this is, and to kind of put a cap on the whole Jimmy Butler discussion, the Heat have built this team in Jimmy Butler's image and Eric Spoelstra's image and Pat Riley's image. And it's so when we're talking about Jimmy Butler, maybe it is a case that Jimmy Butler is in a situation where he can thrive because the Heat have built. But look, man, I mean, this was a different discussion a few weeks ago when he and Eric Spoelstra are yelling and screaming at each other in the huddle. The fact that they've been able to spin it forward and get to where they are now and potentially on the verge of the Eastern Conference Finals, I think is pretty impressive. So Kyle Lowry, and you know, it was not a surprise to me whatsoever that he was out yesterday. Sure. Do you think this is a better team without him right now?
That's a tough one because there's two Kyle Lowrys. So obviously you're asking about the current Kyle Lowry. Do I believe the Heat are a better team without a compromised Kyle Lowry who is 50% speed of that because of that hamstring strain? Sure. I mean, Kyle Lowry is 36 years old, and at this point, 50% of that Kyle Lowry is just another guy. And Kyle was trying to push pace with the pitch-ahead pass like he does all year, but he couldn't push the ball, which he hasn't done that much in the first place and certainly can't right now either. So I think that was a no-brainer. I also think Gabe Vincent in a starting role is like the little engine who could and gets his team going a little bit more. But again, Clay, this is what you and I have spoken about on our Sloman's Home Security Inside the Paint show now, Wednesday from 9 to 10 a.m. on the Big O Show for the last 2 or 3 months. And it's this, the ultimate goal is always something bigger. The ultimate goal for the Miami Heat was not winning game 5, although they certainly needed to. The ultimate goal is not winning game 6. The ultimate goal is a championship. So you want to see if you still could get Kyle Lowry back to the best of Kyle. There have been moments this season, I forgot which game it was, you might remember, when he had like a 20-point fourth quarter and almost rallied the Heat, and he was everything. So you want to get that Kyle back, but Kyle Lowry compromised. It's really interesting, Clay. As a matter of fact, we're going to play one of our lightning round things here that totally unscripted, okay? I'm going to give you a percentage. You say yes or no. If Kyle Lowry was 90% of Kyle Lowry, would you want him on the court? 90%?
Yes, absolutely. Okay.
If Kyle Lowry was 80% of Kyle Lowry, would you want him on the court?
Yes.
70.
Gray area.
60.
No.
So this is the perfect example. And as we all know, you know, medicine's an imperfect science. So you don't know. There's no little like, oh, let's check under the hood here. Oh, Kyle's at 72 today. We know that. You don't really know. So it really is instinctual from the Heat medical staff, from Kyle Lowry, and from the Heat coaching staff, why you should put him out there. He should not have been out there in game 4 and maybe even come back in game 3 in this series. But here's the thing. And these are the kind of analytics I don't need Cooper Moorhead for because I can figure it out. The Heat are 5-0 in these playoffs with Gabe Vincent starting in place of Kyle Lowry. Now I put that through my computer and the tape has come out. Old people used to have tapes come out and it says that's a really good thing, 5-0. So I almost wonder, Clay, if Kyle Lowry shows up tomorrow, I don't think they'll shoot around in Philly, but if they do, and he says, you know what, I feel like I'm 70-75%. I think it's going to put Eric Spoelstra in a tough spot. I don't think it's going to happen. I think Kyle travels with the team. He's from Philadelphia. He's not going to pass up a trip home. So I think people, when you see today Kyle Lowry's traveling to Philadelphia, don't overstate that. Knowing the Heat, they will list him as questionable. The Heat list everyone as questionable. It's like if you ask the Heat, is tomorrow Thursday? They'll go, that's questionable. We'll get back to you on that. That's just how they do it. But I would agree. I think that Kyle Lowry is out. And these are going to be tough decisions for the Heat. One, Kyle Lowry came here to win a championship. Kyle Lowry came here to play in these games. He wants to be out there. But I think Eric Spoelstra has to say, hey, unless we get to a moment of truth, we don't have to do it, which brings Sunday into play. If the Heat don't win tomorrow at Wells Fargo Center, and they do have to come back on Sunday, again, you're 1 week removed from Kyle Lowry's last action. Well, the last time we thought 2 weeks removed from that April 22nd injury was enough, and it wasn't. So this is going to get really dicey for Eric Spoelstra. Because, Clay, if you are playing a Game 7, and I'm not being Nancy negative right here, I'm just saying if there's a chance you might have to go to a Game 7, that'll mean something didn't go perfectly in Game 6. That Gabe Vincent's undefeated record as a playoff starter has come to an end. So then it gets a little bit interesting. So I think the questions you're asking me now about Kyle really are Sunday questions. Really are questions of if the Heat don't win this one. And the other question would then be, if they do open Sunday against Boston or Milwaukee, because that series ends in 6 games, then the other part of the equation was, do you even bring Kyle back then for a, I don't say meaningless game one. I don't want to overstate it here, but for a game one in a series or let him get more time. This is such an unknown. Everyone knows with a soft tissue injury, with a hamstring, there are no givens. Even the us here, the two of us, me and that guy over there can tell you, we know when we pull a groin muscle or a hamstring, you never feel confident the next time out that the strain won't turn into a tear. And we all have that moment when we try to, whether it's me at my age or Clay at his age, do that little bit of explosion, me in the tennis court, Clay on the hoops court, and you go to yourself, yeah, I shouldn't have done that. I'm in trouble now. Yeah. Guys, I'm tapping out. Bring someone else in. This is a really tough decision, but it's not for the simple reason you're 5-0 with Gabe Vincent as a starter. Part two of this equation was, well, if Gabe starts, who fills in? Victor Oladipo was just fine in that role.
I was going to say you took the words out of my mouth as far as that extra element there. Go ahead. No, go for it.
The other element in this equation is it would be a lot easier if Tyler Hero was also the best of Tyler Hero. Then I feel even better. He's been very uneven so far in the playoffs. So they've had to rely on Vic. Vic's first stint last night was tremendous. He came in. He provided energy. It was like, ah, crap. Jimmy's out of the game, and we're getting no relief because of this former All-Star guy. So I thought that was really interesting also. And the postgame was fascinating. I don't know if you saw Vic's interview, where I try to cast him as a complimentary player. Joe Varden from The Athletic tried to cast him as a complimentary player. Yes. And Vic, and God bless Vic. I ain't no complimentary player. I'm just playing one in this series. So you know what? If he's going to have that sort of stubbornness, God bless him, because it helps. So what I'm saying is this, is that Gabe plus Vic right now have proven to be good enough to allow you to sit Kyle Lowry. But at some point, you're going to need a Kyle Lowry-level point guard because the challenges will get tougher.
Yeah, and I'm a big believer that you can't, like, put yourself in the shoes of a superstar caliber athlete when it comes to injuries. And there's but to your point about what you just said, there is a natural there's a natural inclination in any human being. It's just there that when you start to feel something, you're going to hesitate. Like that's just instinctive. Your body is meant to protect itself. And correct. So Kyle Lowry the other day, I thought it was fascinating when he was talking about, I've never dealt with a soft tissue injury before. I'm not used to this. So while I'm a firm believer that, like, you can't put yourself, you can't say, oh, what Ira just said normally, oh, well, when I'm on the tennis court, when I'm playing basketball, like, and I feel it. No, it's not the same thing. In this case, I think you can draw some parallels because Lowry himself admitted, I'm not used to this. So when you watched him the other night and you could see him kind of pull up a few times. It happened quite a few times. And there was a certain point where the Heat were just like, nah, this isn't working. Pulled him out. Right, he went to the locker room, came back, and just wasn't the same. So I think if it is, it's a simple equation. If it is a healthy Kyle Lowry plus a Gabe Vincent off the bench and Victor Oladipo going back to whatever the role was before, yeah, they're better than the current version of the Miami Heat, even what we saw last night. But if it is a 60% Kyle Lowry, maybe even worse, and a Kyle Lowry who's like trying to figure out how to play with this, plus Gabe Vincent, Victor Oladipo, no, they're not as good as the current version of what we saw last night. So I think the thing with Lowry and the Heat medical staff is going to have to make this determination. You're right, Ira, the goal is the championship. Not mm-hmm. only am I not playing him tomorrow night, I may not play him in a game seven, even if he's kicking and screaming and wants to play. Like, at what point, but Ira, it's, you got to play the guys who are going to give you the best chance to win. You can't coddle Kyle Lowry. And again, this is the hypothetical world where he's like begging to play. And like, maybe you play him. And in the first moment where he doesn't look like Kyle Lowry, you pull him out.
And he'll know it. Here's the greater question. And Big O in our crosstalk mentioned this at the top of the show. And I know it's something he wants us to get into. I mentioned it today in my Ask Ira at SunSentinel.com. You signed a 36-year-old point guard for 3 years at $85 million, taking him through his 38th birthday.
Right.
We'd all agree when it comes to the Heat conditioning program, Kyle Lowry does not look like your typical Heat rebuilt body, what they've done over the years. And they've clearly let him slide because Kyle Lowry in that body type has been more than good enough through his 36th birthday to accomplish what he needs to accomplish.
Well, let me interrupt you because I want to get some clarification on this. You're around this team a lot. Is it like, have you heard, hey, you know, he's not having to do the same stuff other, because when I remember, when Big O mentioned the conditioning stuff, is there reason to believe that he's not doing the same thing other guys are? Like, so kind of take people behind the curtain, because I want to be fair to this.
Yeah, I mean, he'd have this conditioning test before the season where you have to run suicides and it's based on your positional type, what type of time you have to make. And I think there have been a ton of allowances.
He looks like me.
Yes. Yes, exactly. It's like, it's exactly the question of, you know what, Clay, even beyond what he's been allowed to do or not allowed to do, sometimes it's just the eye test. Sometimes it's just when he had those khakis on the other day on the Heat bench, and you're going to yourself, you know, we'll step back here going, not maybe the best look right there, you know, for what he was wearing that day, but it works. And Pat Riley did the same thing with Tim Hardaway. He let Tim Hardaway be Tim Hardaway until it reached a point where he said to himself, you know what? At his age, this doesn't work anymore. And you might remember this. He gave him a huge one-year balloon payment, but Tim had to come in for weigh-ins every week or two. And if he didn't make it, he would lose hundreds of thousands of dollars as part of his deal. I think at a certain point, Big was popping in and popping out here. I think at a certain point, you're going to have to step back with Kyle and say, you know what? There weren't other teams giving you 3 years at $85 million. There were teams concerned, one about your age naturally, but about other things. And I'm curious to see if Kyle has a buy-in to that, or if Kyle says this, look, when I was out there, we were fine. I missed one game during the regular season due to injury. That was an ankle at the road opener of the season in October. Everything else was either COVID or personal reasons. I've had one injury, like you mentioned, this first soft tissue injury, this hamstring, and maybe there's pushback there also. But I would think that if a team went that far to guarantee you at that level of pay above $25 million a year at age 38, that maybe you meet them halfway. But I got to tell you, he's a stubborn SOB. And he believes that he knows what's best and how to do it. And when he's at his best, he might have an argument because he still is a really good defender. And he really can be a dynamic offensive player. But you've got to protect that investment also. I am curious if Pat sort of brings him into the suite there and says, you know what? I've been through with this with Tim Hardaway. I'm not going through this again.
No, and I'm glad you bring up that comparison because there is a history, there is a precedent with this thing. And, you know, the question that you and I have had from the beginning of this season, it's, look, if the Heat are healthy, if they do this, if the best of the Heat, yeah, absolutely, they're a championship contender. There's not a doubt in our mind. But the best of the Heat is a healthy Kyle Lowry helping lead this team. And we said from the beginning, when your core is older, when you've got a 36-year-old point guard, when you've got PJ Tucker, who's what, 37?
Yeah, 37, right? And Jimmy is turning 33. Yeah.
Turning 33. That is the big question that, people have been asking. Can it work in a young man's league? Can it work when a 33, 36, and 37-year-old player, when those are the guys who are
And you have two of your three answers. Jimmy Butler looked as good last night and certainly on Sunday as he ever has. PJ Tucker, and I wish people could either go to the arena or get the full view of the court. This guy, every second he plays is relentless. Don't talk to me about his age. This guy is unyielding. So of the gambles that he took, I know Big always talks about Jimmy Butler's contract, takes him through his 36th birthday, the fact that PJ Tucker has a team option, a player option for next year, so that he committed to him at 37. It's his choice now. Two of the three gambles have worked out fine. And you know what? Kyle could work out fine. Because if they finish the Sixers and either of the other two series go seven, I don't think Dallas Phoenix will, but it might. I do very much think Milwaukee Boston could. And the Heat don't open till Tuesday. And Kyle Lowry gets 10 days off. Maybe he comes back fine. And maybe at the end of the next series, we're going, wow, he outplayed the crap out of Marcus Smart right there. They're going to the finals. And all of a sudden, you got, you know, Kyle Lowry and Chris Paul, average age 40-something, in the NBA Finals. And no one's talking about age anymore. There is redemption time for Kyle Lowry. But the clock keeps ticking. And that's a concern right now. I do not believe – well, actually, I do believe there's a certain point, a certain level of the playoffs, where God bless Gabe Vincent – but you're simply getting into the Drew Holiday, Marcus Smart, Chris Paul level, and that's a lot to ask of someone. Right now, in this series, against an older James Harden, against a young, still learning the game, Tyrese Maxey, it's one thing, and the horrific guards that the Sixers have coming off the bench, but at a certain point, you're going to need Kyle. So you got to get him in the best shape, and Kyle Lowry, all of a sudden, is back in a prove-it moment.
And we're up against the break. Maybe it's unfair to play the result, but that's what we're going to do. Because guess what? If for whatever reason
that
and if for whatever reason they don't advance to the NBA Finals, and Kyle Lowry's injury is a reason why, however big the reason, do you really think the Miami Heat are going to want to go through next season where they may be putting themselves in a position where it happens again?
Same thing.
Everybody is questioning, the best condition.
And that's going to be our offseason talking point. And is Gabe Vincent good enough to go through a whole season with? Do they need to get another full-time backup point guard? Could Goran Dragic at 37, even at his age, be a guy who'll come back at the minimum and at least give them a guy you can throw out in spot minutes or something like that? Clay, that'll become the talking point. Look, we know after these playoffs, we're not doubting Jimmy Butler. Eric Spoelstra says we're not allowed to doubt Bam Adebayo. So we'll take Eric's word on that. Tyler Hero, even if it's been uneven lately, he's an award winner. No one this summer is going to doubt Tyler Hero. And I know that when we watch our local 10 Sunday sports show, you and Will Manso are saying to Pat Riley, give Tyler the bag, give him his extension. And I think we'd agree with that. So you're right. This could become the summer of Lowry. And you know what? And I know we're running late, but I don't care. It's a podcast. It's the internet. And I will say this also. This is the very decision the Toronto Raptors made last summer.
Yeah.
They could have kept Kyle. They could have given his bag of money. He would have stayed. But they said, you know what? We've got to transition to Fred VanVleet. We've got to move on. We've got to look to our young players. That could become our summer this summer. The difference is Kyle was a free agent last summer. Toronto can simply go, God bless you. Retiring your number. Not going to give it to Goran. Don't worry about it. And we're going to move on. The Heat can't do that. The Heat still have over $50 million sitting on their contract. They got to find a way to make it work.
Coming up next, because Ira likes to talk long, who steps up to lead the Heat to a Game 6 victory? And I am going to rail on the media narratives from last night that I am so sick and tired of hearing.
F the media. F them.
We're all terrible. Welcome back to Home Stretch right here on Inside the Heat. And the home stretch is going to be really short because Ira went really long in the last segment. No, not really. Not really. We got plenty of time to talk. Love your comments, your questions. Really appreciate it. It does us a huge favor when you guys are hitting that like button. We really appreciate it. I want to get into Game 6 in a minute and which Heat player is going to step up in order for them to win this series and close it out in Philly. But taking you guys behind the curtain a little bit, I went at the game last night. We're kind of trying to steal days off here and there. I'm on Panthers duty tonight. So I was able to watch the game at home. And, you know, you get much different viewpoints, whether you're watching at the arena and at home. And look, I wasn't expecting the inside the NBA crew to talk a whole lot about the Heat and their performance. I mean, like, we've come to expect that by now.
Sure.
By the way, I love the inside the NBA show. That just so much fun, all that. But Ira, when they went to halftime, I was at least expecting, wow, man, that was impressive for the Heat. Now let's talk about this. The first thing they started talking about, Joel Embiid looks distracted. Joel Embiid looks sad that he didn't win the MVP. Charles Barkley literally said, the Philadelphia 76ers are following their leader who just looks distracted and sad that he didn't win the MVP, and that's why they're not showing effort. Ira, Joel Embiid got hit by a truck. Joel Embiid has a broken eye. He's coming off a concussion. And oh, by the way, those aren't the two injuries that are causing him the biggest problem. He's got a ripped up thumb. They showed the ball spinning sideways. It was the ugly knuckleball action that Tim Hardaway used to talk about in the commercial.
Yes.
When the ball is coming off his hands wrong because he's got a ripped up thumb and he's throwing his body all over the floor. And oh, by the way, he hurt his back diving into the stands. Joel Embiid doesn't need me to stand up for him. But what burned me, Ira, was that it's like we're going to blow the Heat performance aside from the first half and try to make this about Joel Embiid not caring, being distracted because he didn't. Give me a break. I've always been a big Joel Embiid fan because is he a troll? Yes. He admits he calls himself Troel Embiid on Twitter. But he's a troll who goes out there. He busts his rear end. I always have a higher level of respect for players who have played with Jimmy Butler and speak highly of the experience because it tells me those guys want to win.
Right.
Joel Embiid is putting his body on the line. I mean, you could make the case that he is putting his future in some ways, not getting like dramatic here, but what if the thumb gets further injured? What if something else happens to the eye where like there's, I mean, it almost looked like it last night. You're seriously going to put last night on Joel Embiid being distracted because he didn't win the MVP? Joel Embiid's distracted because his thumb is ripped up. He's distracted because his eyeball is broken. Give the guy – and the Heat are doing the best thing that they can, which is making life difficult on him, playing within the boundaries of the rules, but also making sure that every shot is difficult. Can we quit this whole thing that Joel Embiid is distracted because he didn't win the MVP and that's why they lost? They lost the game because the Heat are a better basketball team. And if Joel Embiid's distracted, it's because he got hit by a truck, not because there were some voters. And by the way, Ira – not to keep this rant going because I don't want people want to hear about the Heat. The comment in post game, and I know Embiid was asked about it, so he answered the question. He also made this comment. He's spot on. He said it's a lose-lose for me if I don't play, which, by the way, he probably shouldn't be playing with the injuries that he's having to deal with right now. But if I don't play, then it's because I'm soft. Because I in the moment of truth, I'm not out there. And if I do play and I'm not myself, I'm not the usual dominant self, it's because, oh, I'm distracted because I didn't win the MVP. Oh, because I can't play through pain. He's not playing just through pain. He's playing through a broken body. Like, it's insane to me, and I'm done. I'm over it. But, Ira, it bothers me that that's what people latch on to from that. Like, that's the first thing that people are talking about. I'm done. I'm over it. Like, I'm not believing in anything anybody says anymore but what my own eyeballs see. And what you tell us in the Sun Sentinel.
And here's the perspective I would give you this, because I was actually talking to some people in the media room after the game. It would not shock me if when the Sixers got back to Philadelphia and Joel Embiid comes in for training today after the shot he took in the collision with Dwayne Dedmon, where an eye surgeon or someone says, you know what? I think we're at the end here. I think you took that one extra blow and that's more than we can. And we took an X-ray and that orbital fracture has shown that it's been increasing. One, that could happen. Two, the hand surgeon comes in and says, you know what? That ligament's getting a lot worse. And I know we told you that it won't impact you long term, but we're at the point now. I think we need to shut it down. Number three, they just tell him, you know, even with the concussion symptoms, yes, we cleared you, but you're clearly not yourself right now, whatever the reason. So Clay, let me ask you this. So say, and this is hypothetical, folks, later today, the Philadelphia 76ers come out and go, after medical consultation, Joel Embiid has been declared out for Thursday night's game 6 against the Miami Heat at Wells Fargo Center. The narrative is not going to be poor Joel Embiid. the man gave every single thing he could to go as long as he could. You know, Clay, you're in the television business. You know all the stars. You got all the phone numbers. What the hell are all the talk shows going to talk about if Joel Embiid is ruled out by the team?
They're going to talk about the first off that he's soft, he couldn't play through injuries, blah, blah, blah. And then when the Heat wins, oh, well, they only won that series because Joel Embiid was compromised, completely ignoring that the Heat were better, the better team throughout the season. And look, I'm not as frustrated about this from the Heat perspective, even though we are a South Florida media and it's a Heat show. It bothers me that we don't treat these guys like human beings. And, you know, this is kind of a delicate situation. Remember a few weeks ago when Adam Schefter had the tweet that came out after Dwayne Haskins died, that like one of the first things that he mentioned was Dwayne Haskins' kind of uneven football career, as opposed to like treating these guys like people and human beings. And like, it just bothers me that, and this is genuine here, man. Like it bothers me that we're not treating Joel Embiid and we in the media sense. And I know you're not like this, and whatever, but like the narrative is about Joel Embiid and completely ignoring that these are not typical ailments. These are not like this is stuff that he should not be playing with.
These are not things that he caused. This was not lack of conditioning. This was not putting himself in harm's way off the court in some family incident or some clubbing incident or something like that. These are all just natural parts of the game. And I get all that. Here's the bigger picture, though, bringing it back to the Heat.
Thank you, because I would have wasted the last 8 minutes of this show
because
talking about this.
People love the salacious. The Miami Heat have had one salacious moment this season. The benchside incident in March with Udonis Haslem and Eric Spoelstra and Jimmy Butler. And it was a field day. And you could probably go back, Clay, because you can go to your people at Nielsen or whatever and get the ratings, that the Miami Heat probably were mentioned more in the ensuing 7 days after that then maybe combine the entire rest of the season because it was a salacious moment. Instead, what's salacious now? Should the Sixers give James Harden the extension that he's expecting? Did they blow the Simmons trade? Was that not the right move for them to make? Can you win around Joel Embiid unfairly because of his injuries? So that's the thing. The Heat have not presented us with enough salacious. They've simply played basketball. They've simply had people who've gone out and done it. Jimmy Butler, for all his sort of look at me kind of moments, they're not like half the rest of this league that takes it to such a higher level because he also has a certain privacy about himself where he draws a line when it comes to his Instagram posts. He's not a guy on Twitter. He's not active on Twitter at all. So that's the thing is that's what this has become. It's not become what's the best basketball story. It's not become let's look at Cooper Moorhead's analytics and that's fascinating the way he broke it down. It's like we're – okay, you know what? You know what last night was about? Matter of fact, I'll put you on the spot here. What was 90% of the national postgame coverage about the one moment that happened in last night's Heat game? You know this.
And now I'm like racking my brain. I mean,
and another one. And another one.
Was it the MB diving in the crowd?
No.
DJ Khaled. I tried
to give you the hints there.
By the way, props to you, because like the easy thing to do is to immediately ask a game question of Eric Spoelstra. You had the first question,
anyone wanted to know. I mean, let's face it. He gets the rebound. He gives the ball to Max Strus. He pumps up the crowd, and then he gives Eric Spoelstra a shoulder rub. And I got to tell you, when I walk down from my seat to go in the postgame interview room, it's right by where the player family are, and I noticed at the game that Nicky Spoelstra and Eric's two sons were there earlier, and I really wanted to ask Nicky Spoelstra, does Khaled give a better back rub? I need to know this. I need to know you versus Khaled because he got those big meaty muscles going in there.
Yeah,
but that's the moment people are talking about today. I am sure if you Google two words, and I spelled Khaled wrong and I apologize because I'm used to Khalid Reeves back in the day. But if you Google Khaled and Spoelstra, I guarantee you will get more Google hits than Spoelstra and any other words. Spoelstra and Butler, Spoelstra and Embiid, Spoelstra and playoffs or whatever. That's the kind of moment. That's the moment that people look for. That's the kind of moment that gets played up big and just playing basketball the right way. One of the stories I'm working on is when this series ends and we talk about the factors in the series, we'll talk about Jimmy Butler's 40 burger. We'll talk about Max Strus coming back around with his shot and Duncan Robinson not becoming essential as people thought. We'll talk about James Harden when we find out more about the clubs in Miami. We'll talk about Joel Embiid. No one's going to talk about PJ Tucker. Yet that embodies what the Heat have been this season, the grunt-like, hard work player that no one gives a rat's ass about when DJ Khaled is giving back rubs in the middle of the shoulder rubs in the middle of the third quarter. So that's the whole thing about this Heat. They haven't created enough moments. We're trying here, but that's the thing. That's who they are. There hasn't been enough salacious, and all sports coverage is about the salacious right now.
It is. And look, there's a line here. I'm perfectly fine with the DJ Khaled. In fact, I'm more than fine with the DJ Khaled thing being the headline from last night, because it was real. It was genuine. It was fun. It was different. Like, and I'll tell you the thing that I remember the most. And look, we spent weeks doing our F1 coverage and like building up to our specials and doing it. It was crazy. But the thing I remember the most from Sunday was Martin Brundle, the Sky Sports reporter, mistaking Paolo Banchero for Patrick Mahomes. Patrick Mahomes. By the way, yeah. I do think it was more producer in his ear that said, hey, you know, there's Patrick Mahomes. But that was the moment, right? But it was real. It actually happened. Yes. What I have a problem with is this fake narrative, this like, let's make something out of
manufacture,
nothing.
Manufacture,
come on, man. I understand that. What's different, what's salacious, sells. What happened between Jimmy Butler and Eric Spoelstra and Udonis Haslem in the huddle, man, that deserved to get blown up, right? And look, I think those of us who are around the team, we understand that that's part of who the Heat are about. And I think we were all – I think what we said was the result is what's going to matter here, that if they're able to – but historically, they put that stuff aside and they're fine. When it comes to Joel Embiid, when it comes to this Heat 76ers series, if you want to tell me, if you want to do a whole show on, hey, the reason why the Heat won this was because Joel Embiid was hurt and compromised, I disagree, but at least that's real. At least you have something to hold on to, and you can say, like, at least I can debate with you on that.
Right.
I can't debate anybody who's telling me that Joel Embiid is a lesser player because he's distracted, because he didn't win the MVP when the guy is out there throwing his body around. So anyway, done. Moving on. Game six coming up on tomorrow night. And by the way, you mentioned Cooper Moorhead's article again. This is why I'm confident heading into this game. The truth about game four was that for whatever the final score looked like, for whatever you felt in the fourth quarter, that game was played on the Heat's terms. That game, the Sixers took the shots the Heat wanted them to take. And the Heat missed shots, 7-for-35 from three-point range. But go back and look at them. They were wide open. Those are looks that the Heat are going to take again, and I feel like they're going to make. I think they win game six. I think my confidence level is a little higher than yours. How do you see game six playing out?
You were asking in the previous segment who I thought the player would be, the sort of man of truth, and I think it's Jimmy Butler. And it would be the perfect Jimmy moment. The team that decided that Ben Simmons was more important than him, that basically let him go in 2019 for the Heat and that sign and trade with Josh Richardson and draft pick. So I think this is a Jimmy moment. This sets up as a Jimmy moment to wave goodbye to all the Sixers fans. So I think it's another Jimmy game. And I think your point is perfect. If Jimmy is the player who he was in games 3 and 4 in Philadelphia, but now someone else, a Max Strus or someone else, step up and hit shots, maybe a Gabe Vincent, it changes the narrative there. I think this is a Jimmy moment. This is what Jimmy did in the bubble. This is what Jimmy has done in the best of times with the Heat. I think it's going to revolve around Jimmy, as it should. He's their star. And to bring our entire Sloman's Home Security Inside the Paint show full circle today, I think this is the moment, again, when Jimmy, whether you debate he's a top 10 player or not, I think if he plays like a top 10 player, that's what I think the key to the game will be.
And I've heard this a bit. Like, is Jimmy going to get tired because he's carrying the team? He's not carrying the team like he was yet in the bubble. That was a completely different thing. What he's doing right now, Jimmy Butler isn't exerting any more energy than he normally, because normally he's flying around on defense anyway. It's the same level of energy. It's just he's doing it with the ball in his hand. So I'm confident that he's going to be the guy to step up. And I you know what? I'm going to go Tyler. I think Tyler plays like he did the other night. And I think finally we see the Tyler Hero game on the road that we've been waiting to see. That's it, guys. We're running long as usual. Big O Show rolls on next. We'll catch you again right here next week on Inside the Paint.